Hi, I'm Michael Masaru Flora, and welcome to the Indexical Podcast. This episode features a conversation with multidisciplinary artist Billy Gomberg. As a musician, his practice incorporates traditional and modern synthesis, digital treatments, acoustic location recordings, and occasional instrumentation. As a visual artist, he uses film photography to document the natural world and its human interface. This conversation took place in front of a live public audience as part of the exhibition Several Paths Together at Indexical, Santa Cruz, California. Thank you, Billy.
Thank you, Michael. Thank you, Jasper.
Where to begin? I mean, I'm kind of like a sucker for starting from the beginning. So I first discovered your music in like 2009. At that time, there's sort of like this really like strong DIY underground CDR net label scene. Yeah, I think I discovered your album on this label called And Or, and the title is Come, which I strongly associate with sort of like digital synthesis and like software and stuff, which was kind of like popular at the time. So I'm like kind of curious, how did you come to music and where are your initial investigations through software?
No, I was just talking about this. Oh. I started playing bass guitar in high school. Yeah, but Andy's heard this too many times. The first concert I went to was Nine Inch Nails' first Downward Spiral tour, and I got kicked in the face. And it was a great big mosh pit, and it was a really good time. And through high school, I was attending a lot of various kinds of electronic music concerts and DJ nights, and it wasn't electronic music like this, or that you go to see at venues like Indexical or The Lab. It was like, industrial and ambient concerts at the Vic and the Metro in Chicago. And there was a lot of synthesizers and electronics involved in the music. And I slowly started finding where and what I should be using. And it was really different at the time. You can still get synthesizers like that.
And what period, like what time period are we?
96, 97, 98. Okay. Right. And, I was teaching myself a lot about music theory and rhythm. And then by the time like Calm comes out, I'm forgetting it. And I'm finding ways in software and now in hardware to short circuit that, which is a very literal metaphor, but break it up and sort of make the instruments take steps for me and then take those steps out. The music I was working on didn't sound like this at all. Even though I think I maybe could have done this at the time. My brain wasn't there for thinking of structure and palettes like that. Wow, that was a long time ago. But it was awesome. I had a blast. Like I was having fun going out to DJ nights and loft parties or warehouse parties. And, you know, so in Chicago, that was anything. It was basically this spectrum from house music and raves to goth and industrial and ambient nights. And I don't know if you can hear all that in what I do.
So how did these goth and industrial nights and house music, how did that turn into you getting involved with music making?
I was just trying it out. I bought like a 4-track, right? And I was playing, and I'm not really a songwriter, is what I learned. I don't really do lyrics very well. But I found someone who did. You know, I have a band.
What was the band name again?
It was a misinterpretation of the German phrase Schadenfreude, because someone translated it for us wrong.
Oh.
Which is great, and I think is, like, materially is a function of what I do now, is like not interpreting things one-to-one anymore and having additional meanings in there and having potential meanings missing if or unavailable in a way, because there's so many different places you can, for me, so many different places where I can find meaning in what I do and try to express it to you, but also like everyone comes to this with something different. And I can't instruct you what meaning you should bring. So that was like a real stumble into that understanding.
And so are these like explorations like solo, or is this in group settings, collaborations,
at the time? No, I had a band. It was me and it was Chloe, who was the singer, and she wrote the lyrics. And I met her through her girlfriend at my high school. And we had one guitar player and he was not good. And then
this was in Chicago,
and then another student I was with, and we were doing dance together. I was doing modern dance, and her boyfriend was a guitar player, and he was our guitar player, and that was really fun for like a year and a half, and it was a great experience. And it didn't pick up again because I went to college, and then I was sort of playing more and more, and what I fell into was, when all this stuff veers into noise music and what at the time was IDM and glitch music, and what tools I could have to make that, which I didn't have. So then I started really making it up with, I had like a hacked Speak and Read and a Casio and like a digital effects unit. I got a Guitar Center for like $60. And I was just sort of making things up from there. And then music got a lot freer for me. And my understanding of what I could do with it was a lot more free than, we're going to write a song and then we're going to play the next song and we're going to get together. And it became, that's when I came to improvisation, which guides a lot more of what I do now than anything else. And that was in Iowa City. And that was much noisier and looser and kooky.
So your self-titled, like your first, I guess it would be considered a initial debut release, I guess.
Under my own name?
Yeah, under your own name. How did that come about in relation to...
I don't think any of those happened until I was in Providence. I have a master's degree in computer music from Brown. And at the time I was not doing very academic music. I was actually trying to do this. And I think if you listen to Come, I'm trying to do that now. Like that's actually this completely different tools trying to do the same thing. And seeing where I fail and following that path and not trying to course correct. There were a couple net labels. I don't remember their names. Like 2003 to 2005. And I was using, Native Instruments Reactor, which I highly recommend, to do stuff that sounded kind of like this.
And for the youngsters in the audience, Net Labels was this thing.
They were great.
In the 90s and 2000s, like pre-Bandcamp, pre-SoundCloud, pre-streaming. Like you could stream things.
You would download like a zip file of MP3s. And I was talking with, and it was very international. It was really, the labels were in Spain and France. And that's how we met Ben Owen. I did something for whatever he called his Net Label at the time.
So I'm okay. So
you're doing these
industrial projects. You start kind of developing your own practice. Mm-hmm. And it sounds like, you've done a lot of work with Andy Guthrie, your partner, Frau Fraulein. You also had like this trio with Andy and Richard Kammerman, Delicate Sen. And so I'm starting to think that collaboration is sort of like a big part of your practice. Yeah. How do you think that that's sort of informed what you do over time?
When did we start playing with Richard? Like 2005 or 2006? That was really fun. And that was something we did for like 10 something years. We really did that a lot. We played out here. We did a tour in 2009 from like Vancouver down to LA.
Did you play Santa Cruz?
No. We didn't. We drove straight down the 5. Andy drove straight down the 5. neither Richard or I had driver's licenses. It was a huge task for Andy. We were very grateful. But when I stopped playing traditional synthesizers with a keyboard or with a sequencer or something, I realized I was playing them more as instruments. And then it became more available to play with other people. And at that time, especially pre-2010, I was using a laptop computer a lot more, Max MSP and Reactor, to do a lot of the things I'm doing with a giant piece of hardware right now. But using that as the instrument I was playing, sometimes with an extra small synthesizer or not. And that was really engaging for me, and it's still really engaging for me. It's not something that happens as much for me in the Bay, which is fine. But it made my relationship with sound material and musical material that I think comes out, maybe not always feeling improvised because of the nature of it. This is really digital synthesis stuff. It's the product of me playing and improvising over time, repeatedly practicing and practicing and practicing. Like this, I think tonight was material from, there was a little bit in there from 2 or 3 years ago, but I get to do this tonight by practicing and practicing and practicing whenever I have the time, whenever I want to, whenever I'm feeling it, maybe I'm not feeling it. And then coming back when someone says, you should play a gig, and being like, oh, where did I go and what did I do? And reviewing that stuff and practicing that material again, because there's a sampler in there that saves some of it. So I can revisit this stuff and do it again.
So you talk about like having a sampler in there. So mm-hmm. And you talk about recycling your old material. Mm-hmm. And, I'm assuming some of this also has some like live synthesis, but there's also a lot of what sounds like field recordings as well.
That's exactly what's going on, Michael. You got it.
And the field recordings, is that something that is a product from like your initial investigations into electronic music, or is that, how did that become incorporated into your practice?
Because I think it's something we were using in improvisations. I think more strongly in the second tour Andy and I did in 2014, in the Midwest. It was a mini disc recorder, and it's just something we'd played with a lot. And now, for the last like 2 or 3 years, like the field recordings are actually what tells me it's time to stop playing. I have like 20, 25, 30 minutes. And when those are done, I have some other things that I've prepared to go alongside them, but that means our time together listening to my music is done. And there is, I said about spaces where meaning is removed or unavailable, but that's also a space for the audience to come and bring their own understanding. And the contrast of those two materials is that space for us. Some people ask me, do you process them live? I do not. I just play them out of my phone into the mixer. And for me, those are this other improviser who is playing with me. And I think in some of them, you can hear things that might sound like someone else. And sometimes it is someone else there. I think there's a couple of these where someone walks by or I sniffle or handle something. As when I'm performing, those are events to keep me engaged with what is happening.
It's like a metronome.
In a way. Oh, yeah. No, it's like what is happening over time. And there are these things to remind me to stay here and think about where I am with this table of stuff and with you and the space that it's creating.
So, you know, you're going out, you're collecting these location recordings, because I know you don't care for the term field recordings.
I'm very picky about language sometimes. But the reason I do that is I want to highlight that I'm in a place. And most of the recordings, if not all the recordings, are from places that are on the wall.
Do you see parallels between your photography and your location recordings?
Well, there's a triangle, because there's the location recordings and the photography and the synthesis material, the electronic material, I guess, where all of these things are things I've done again and again and approached in different or the same ways. When I'm at home and I am practicing, I'm not so affected by the weather. But when I am out in the world and I am putting microphones down and I am doing photography, I am affected by the world and the weather. And when I'm at home, I'm affected by other things that might be more internal in my mind and my feelings and my body. But being able to do these things again and again sort of helps me know what I'm saying or what I'm seeing or what I'm hearing by revisiting them and working through, you know, with music, similar material until some of it works. And then that's where some, you know, like potentials for meaning fall off and other potentials for meaning open up.
And so photography as a medium for this practice is sort of, it's a more recent thing, correct?
Yes. Yeah. The little joke I've had with myself and a couple people I've talked with is this is me having to admit to being a photographer. I've only been a photographer for like 12 years, which for most people is like, wow, you've really been doing this. And this started, I require myself to tell this part of the story because this is, for me, where other meaning and approaches to meaning come from. My last job in New York City from 2012 to 2018, I worked at Rebecca School in Manhattan. This is an independent school for children with special needs, ages 3 to 21. And like a year or two in, we had a baking program for our transitions age students, which was, you know, a bit of job training and spinning out into internships and stuff. And we're like, we would like to do a photography project. I was like, that sounds great. I'd love to help out, but who's going to take the photos? And they just said, yeah, you can do that, right? And I mean, I had like a digital point and shoot, and like we had like little snaps and, you know, for the family and stuff like that. But I really didn't think about what, like the amount of work that goes into like becoming a photographer. And I had a community that wanted me to do it. So I did it a lot. And that was a very different type of photography than what is here.
And so you've been doing photography from that initial moment. Yeah. That was like in 2014.
Yeah, it was like 2013, 2014. And it was really community focused. I was really embedded in that community. I was really connected with that community. I am an ICDL certified DIR floor time provider, which maybe you don't know what it is, but that's how embedded in that community I was, is that I was available to get certifications. And I did. And like that was Manhattan. That's not Northern California. That's a really different environment to do photography in. And with a learning community as subject is also not, was no longer available to me when we moved here in February 2018. So a lot of transitions happened about, you know, I got photography I was doing in New York, got positive feedback. The people I worked with liked it a lot. I did a lot of yearbooks. They're adorable. And my photography was showing up on album covers a number of people.
Yeah. So I think, one of the first places I started to see Billy's, photography is Billy was asked to provide album art for this label Dinzu Artifacts.
And they're in Los Angeles. Joe's in Los Angeles. Okay. Yeah. And that's something where people are like, oh yeah, can we just use it? Like, sure. And a number of tapes. And even recently I've had a lot of art on Joe's tapes. That was really cool.
I think for me as a curator and organizer, I think, you know, we had already had this relationship with Billy and kind of where, you know, I'd worked with them and their music, but then I started seeing their photography showing up on their Instagram, starting to see it in Dinzu Artifacts, and it just kind of felt like this natural thing to ask Billy, like, hey, would you be interested in doing a photography exhibition at Indexical?
And I am. That was a really awesome suggestion.
And I remember when we were like selecting these images, I'm going to throw down some deep knowledge here. I bet you guys didn't know this about me, but I actually like was reminded of, there's this famous photography exhibition. It's called New Topographics, Photographs of a Man Altered Landscape. And it's from 1976 from this, Museum of Photography and Film in Rochester, New York. And like, I kind of like immediately like recognized sort of this, I guess like sort of this history in what you were doing. And so, but you know, knowing that you haven't, I guess this is more of a question. Right. Did you arrive at these images through the lens of the history of the medium?
No. And it's something I spoke to a photographer that he's in Maine, Andrew McLeese. And I asked him a question once. I was like, I don't know how people find out about photography as a photographer. And so when I started in New York, I was just like, what is it? Because all of a sudden it was like an art form for me. Like, what, how do you do, not just technically, where like I needed a camera that had really fast autofocus and could work well in low lighting, but like, okay, this is, how am I going to teach myself to do that work for my job better and in a way that I can connect with, because that will tell the story of the community I'm working in. What is photography when it relates to artistic meaning and aesthetic meaning? And I didn't even know about New Topographics until after we moved here, because it just didn't present itself to me. It's also not a Manhattan art form. It's actually a tremendously Californian art form.
Yeah, it's very much associated with the West. And it was sort of like this, it became sort of a artistic movement in photography, where these because traditional landscape photography are people like Ansel Adams, where it's like these photographs of supposed wild places without any sort of like man-made impact on nature. And so this,
you don't see the tourist loop in Yosemite when you look at Ansel Adams' right. photography.
And so this like movement really kind of revolutionized things, and that it was showing the impact of industrial development, of suburban sprawl, and really, yeah, became sort of like a turning point in landscape photography. The other thing I thought of when we were picking out photographs was there's a local academic author, Anna Singh, and she wrote this book about mushrooms and about how there's this Matsutake mushroom, how it really thrives in sort of like these human disturbed landscapes. And she talks about how she describes like a disturbance as a change in environmental conditions that causes a pronounced change in an ecosystem. And I thought about this book a lot when we were picking photos, because I felt that your practice of like seeing and photographing really like recognizes sort of this like livability and sort of like this possibility of these like human disturbed spaces. And so I'm kind of curious, is this like a specific interest of yours?
Yeah.
But also, like, are you actively seeking out these types of spaces?
I'm actively seeking out these types of spaces. That's true. This, for me, in terms of both this type of meaning and relationship with my location, which is generally Northern California in the Bay, was really intensified. Is not the word I want to use. It's the one I have. Concentrated during high pandemic era, and Jasper was like 3 or 4, and we had nothing to do but get out of the apartment, and we were in the Presidio a lot. And the Presidio used to be a giant military base, and now it's a national park, and you can rent really expensive apartments there. But that was where we were, and it's beautiful. And here is, there's a giant old World War I cannon at Baker Beach. And there's all, you're walking up a beautiful path, and you're on the cliff, and you can see the ocean, and there's all these overgrown military structures. And all the trees are not native. All the trees were planted as camouflage. And there's little patches that say, we're trying to regrow the native landscape here. And that's an incredible task in that area. And like a coyote walks by. This is a metaphor I came to through my music, which is I am sort of walking around this handful of materials and techniques and tempos or whatever Maybe I use a really bassy kick drum sound. Maybe I don't. Maybe this is more rhythmic. Maybe I don't. And I sort of go around in these circles. And this is what happened. This is how I got to these places on the wall, is these circles I was going around in got wider and wider. But I still kept going to the same places in these loops. But with this realization in mind that so much of Northern California is a beautiful landscape that we've done a lot of work on. And we've made it into so many other things over the last century or so. And there is a availability of meaning and experience there, but it's also really complicated because this didn't used to be our land. This used to be something completely different. And I can say that. And in photography, I can try to really creatively fail to express it. And in that failure is where the viewer's understanding comes in and the viewer's language comes in. Because I can't, like, I was never a great lyricist because I couldn't say it. I love doing music like this because I don't have to. It does it for me. And there's been a huge end around to I guess it's landscape photography. Because it's not street photography anymore.
Yeah, I'm curious if anybody in the audience has any questions like for Billy, whether it's like music or photography related.
Do you consider yourself more of a composer or an audio, audio sound person?
I consider myself an improviser.
A what?
An improviser.
An improviser.
I like to play the music more than I like to write a composition. I like to play the instrument that creates the sound design more than I like to sit and make sure it's perfect. There is a, I think, composed sense to this type of performance that I'm doing because there is this process of revisiting and replaying material that I've played before. I really like to play music. That's why I've kept at it for a really, really long time. That's what I came to, in the basement in the 90s. And I really like to do this photography because I really like to go to these places. And I've said it to a couple people tonight, and I say it a lot now. I don't know if I do like joyous, ecstatic music about how much fun I'm having, but I set up my practice and my actually practicing so that when we're here together, I'm at ease and I'm having a pretty good time. I'm not struggling with myself. Like, it's really easy to struggle with that kind of thing. It's really easy to get into the details. Let's play. Let's have a space to do a little back and forth communication, even if it's you listening. And like, I'm listening too. I'm making a lot of choices and I'm playing. And that's how I don't answer your question directly.
Any other questions?
Earlier this evening, you were talking about starting to introduce yourself more to music theory, other kinds of listening,
yep.
Teaching yourself some stuff as you become more interested in music. But what did that look like for you? Because it sounds like that was maybe in the 90s. And like, are you lessons? Are you listening? Are you reading? How's that coming to you?
I had like 6 months of bass guitar lessons where I would bring in like indie rock CDs and help me figure out this bass line. And I think my high school had a music theory class, and I took that senior year of high school. And at that time I had a synthesizer, and it was easier for me to understand how music theory is applied in Western music with a keyboard in front of me.
Still use the bass guitar.
Yeah. When I play with Andy, I play a bass guitar and I prepare it with alligator clips. So I can't play traditionally, and it makes like more percussive sounds, much more metallic sounding. And that was a little moment I had when I got that guitar in 2011, 2012. What that was actually like for me in the 90s was I could walk north on Clark Street, past the Tower Records at Clark and Belden, and then keep going on Clark and go to Secondhand Tunes, which was somewhere between Fullerton and Diversey. And I could keep going up to Clark and Belmont, and that's where Guitar Center was. And the Alley, which is where I got like my Bauhaus t-shirts and my Joy Division t-shirts. And then if I went east on Belmont from there, Armageddon Records was between Clark and Broadway somewhere. And that's where I could get some like goth CDs from Europe. And then if I cut back south on Broadway, I could stop at Reckless Records. And I was terrible, terrible, terrible about keeping any money on me because of this. So just a ton of listening and a ton of saying, oh, we're going to this show tonight, and saying yes, and just seeing what all that was. And I didn't have anything I needed at the time to incorporate that into the music I wanted to make in a meaningful way. So when I talk about like failing to produce the thing and just following that, like I guess I've been doing that for a really long time. Where I think, and I don't want to sound critical about this, because I think it's actually really cool, I can completely review the history of a genre of music or production technique in like a couple hours on YouTube right now. And I don't have to go to a store and pick out like which AMM CD is it going to be, right? Where I learn about that channel of improvised music in England and Europe from the 60s until right now. How do I learn about drone music in its like crazy path from non-Western traditions into Western traditions and all over the place? It's just like, go buy a CD, and what CD is it going to be?
You're talking about listening
to things and not knowing necessarily what it was at the time. And especially like going to shows, it was like, I didn't know most of what I was going to see at those shows. And like, what was it? It was like 96 or 97. There was like a one or two night festival, and like Steve Roach opened one night and like Robert Rich opened one night, and they both had like 8 synthesizers with them. And I was like, that's a lot of synthesizers. And now in my life, they're both like in the West. I'm like, how the heck did they get all that crap to Chicago? Like, that's so much stuff. And I didn't really, and mail ordering a CD and not always hearing what I liked, and sort of failing to be like, what is this? What was that thing I experienced? And then also not wanting to necessarily make that music in some cases.
Yeah, I feel like that's like a big part of being creative isn't necessarily your influences, but it's more like, I don't want to sound like that.
Like I've seen Steve Roach play live in like 1996 and last spring at Grace Cathedral. I don't want to make music like him at all. I totally enjoy it. And I think in terms of seeing synthesizers broadly as something I could play with, that was really influential, but I've never made anything that sounds like that.
I think one more question, Ben.
This might be kind of like meandering, multi-part, so answer how you want. But
go for it.
I get the sense that there's kind of like an observational sense to your music and photography, and I also wonder if you feel like there's a distinction between like a kind of like documentarian practice versus kind of participatory or collaborative practice with what you're observing or documenting. And then the second part to this is like, how might this relate or not relate to like reacting to the general like immediate shifts in like sociopolitical landscapes, yeah, and like how that tends to happen around us and to us?
I'm going to ask you to remember that second question because I'm going to get to it, but I'm going to start with the first one, which is a mix between how much of this practice is observing, and I read it as how much is a sort of internal engagement with myself. And I think that's in between is where I'm trying to go. I don't think I do casual observation. I don't think I can. In landscape photography, like if we're gonna talk about like Ansel Adams, like there's this in like beautiful landscape photography, and this comes from painting, you are representing this beautiful thing, and we are not there. And I have photographs like that. I've been to Yosemite. It's really gorgeous. It's a lovely place to do photography. There's a lot of lovely places to do photography. And I do that photography. But in terms of like where I see myself in the work I'm doing, it's in this place in between where I am encountering something and I'm seeing it. And I'm processing it and I'm coming back to it. And I'm trying again and again to articulate that moment of recognition that I have with my own language, with my inner language. That's why I don't write lyrics, right? And I think that was your first question. I think there was other language you used that I like and I didn't get to, but that's why I say sometimes you bring your own meaning, which is awesome. And I think when it comes to where this moves in contemporary sociopolitical contexts is I choose where I am in relation to the world that moves around us. And I choose to do this work and say, yeah, let's do a photo show. Let's do a concert, because people are going to come here and we're going to meet each other and we're going to talk about it. And we might not talk specifically about this thing or that thing, because there's like 4 dozen things that we can talk about. But we are all carrying that with us tonight. And to a degree, we're all a little compromised by it tonight, which is, for me, is fine. Again, that's where I come back to where meanings become unavailable or blocked. That language we bring to a space like this, where I'm not immediately making political work. This is kind of political. I am observing and reflecting on my engagement with sites of history and multiple histories and multiple types of land use. There's a lot of the Marin headlands on the wall and in the recordings. The Marin headlands could be a suburb right now. There was a whole plan to turn them into a suburb in the 60s. That's not what happened. they got turned into a park instead. And we can go walk our dogs and go surfing and take photos and do location recordings and sit and have tea there and there and there and enjoy being there. Genuinely, these aren't spaces I go to because I feel conflict when I'm there. These are places I go to because I love getting there, and they're different every time in ways that change. There's a bunch of stuff that changed in that building the last time I was there. And I bring to them my understanding of there being just tons of history that happens in Northern California that gets me to go to a place that used to be a missile site that's now covered in graffiti with a couple other folks who are walking their dogs or with a school group or on a date. That's so much to hold and to sort of fail to cohere into something like a poem. And making creative work now and celebrating it for myself, because I'm really happy with this. I feel great about this. It is hard because there's a lot of things to feel not great about. But if people come together for this thing that I feel great about, and I can share that, we can also have space to talk about this, which is like the crazy amount of things we've done to the land and to ourselves here. And that we can still find community and relationships, and the way those bring will challenge and create space for communication. Rebecca's school was a DIR floor time school. This is a relationship-based model. All the work we did to bring our students higher and higher in functional, emotional, developmental capacities was relationship-based. It was about us being here together and following our lead, following the child's lead. Child's not here. I'm making music. Child left, actually. but that really affected my understanding of creating spaces for meaning in work that could be abstract or concrete. Like, this is a photograph. It's pretty concrete. I didn't alter it. It's not a digital photograph that I've changed things on. That's what these spaces looked like at the time that I pressed the shutter. But like, I want to articulate, like, these do represent a history of Northern California that is complex. And everyone who sees them brings their own understanding of what these are, just based on, have they been there? I don't know. Have you been to these places? Right?
I kind of feel like that what you are talking about is really summed up in the exhibition text. Yes. For this exhibition. And so perhaps I'll end it with this, but I know together with writer Chris Zolda, you drafted the exhibition test, which begins very poetically, glancing at the familiar through a new set of eyes, we rediscover our surroundings, hillsides, coastlines, interiors, exteriors, in-betweens, limits, objects, openings. So I'm going to end it there.
It's a beautiful night out. Thank you, Michael. This was awesome.
Thanks, everybody, for coming out.